And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to take your phone calls with Michelle Bellanger as we talk about her work. We're also going to get into her work, The Dictionary of Demons, because let me tell you, she's got a great set of stories there. Records of 1,500 demons. Oh, my gosh. But we'll do that, and we'll get to your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Michelle Bellanger is with us as we talk about all her works. And how did you get involved in all of this, Michelle? And of course, you have been a star in A&E's Paranormal State for how many years now?
I was behind the scenes from the beginning, and I came on Paranormal State the second season officially. It was on through till the end when we all kind of collectively said we were done because we wanted to make genuine TV and not necessarily good TV.
Are you still doing what kind of TV are you doing now? Anything?
I've been doing little spots with like Monsters and Mysteries of America.
Great, good for you.
Often acting in my capacity as a cult expert. Less work with the psychic stuff because honestly, while I'm good at doing the psychic stuff, it's not the only thing that I do, and I think it wastes an awful lot of my education. I mean, I studied demonology at my Jesuit Catholic college for my undergrad days and, have a degree in comparative religious studies. And that's where all the books like The Dictionary of Demons come from.
And you can get typecasted if you keep, hanging in there doing what you were doing.
Yeah. Well, and I think people have a perception of what a psychic is and what a psychic does. And while that is one part of who I am and what I do, it is not everything. And I really don't want to be... I don't like boxes. I don't like being put in boxes. And I really needed to break from the TV stuff, too. It's very demanding. It's very exhausting. And especially if, with the kind of work that we were doing on Paranormal State, investigating hauntings that were really extreme, tended to be dark, with people who really felt that they were under attack, who had horrible things going on. It was very challenging. There were a couple of cases that I felt legitimately traumatized by.
Well, here's some of my psychic ability. You're French, and you were born in Ravenna, Ohio.
Yes, I
Pretty
was.
Pretty good, huh?
You were, yes.
Guess how I knew that? I'm psychic. I pick these things up. Let's go to calls in a second. But your book, The Dictionary of Demons, not only it's a great book, but it's kind of scary, Michelle.
It's a topic that a lot of people aren't willing to touch, and because I don't believe that any knowledge should be forbidden, and because I don't fear studying it, I think that knowledge is power. I felt that it was something that needed to be done. It came about from a conversation with Father Bob Bailey, who also worked with me on Paranormal State. And he was complaining about looking up names. When you do a traditional Catholic exorcism, one of the things that you try to do is you try to get the name of the thing that you are dealing with. But you get these names that are like solid consonants. They don't sound like the standard three or four that you see on every television show or every movie.
That's right. Yeah.
And how do you? There is no research, or at least there was no resource to go conveniently look up, the big book of demon names.
What's your favorite demon name?
Leonard, actually.
Leonard?
They're one of the Sabbatic goats. Now, this takes a little explaining. Back in the day, during the European witch craze, one of the things that witches and worshippers of the devil were believed to do were to go off and cavort in the woods and meet with the devil, often in the form of a goat. And one text identifies that goat by name as Leonard. And it was all I could do to remain very serious with the subject matter and simply report in the scholarly way of Leonard the demon goat, and not just kind of go, well, wouldn't the other demons make fun of him? He's just got such a not very scary name, Leonard the goat. But yes, Leonard the goat.
Well, the Baphomet that was put up, the statue in Detroit, has got that goat head, that human body, cloven hoofs. That's kind of a scary thing. He's got big devil-looking horns.
Yeah, that's a symbol that's been around for a good 200 years. But if you go back far enough, Baphomet or Baphomet was actually the false god that the Templars were accused of worshiping.
That's right.
And Baphomet is almost certainly the name, a corruption of Muhammad. And so the real core, like, and that ended up being sort of the, I don't know, the kicker with so many of the demon names is if you go back far enough, they're not what you think. I mean, some of them certainly are, but some of them are someone's misunderstanding of somebody else's god. So one man's demon is another man's god. A lot of the biblical demons are actually the heads of pantheons of religions that were competing with Judaism and Christianity back in the day. And Baphomet was almost certainly Muhammad, and the Templars were basically accused of giving up their Christianity and siding with what at the time was the religion of their enemy.
There are, of course, a number of people in Detroit very upset with that statue. But can you imagine what would have happened had that statue been placed in Mecca or Medina?
Oh, well, any other, especially countries that are founded on religious extremism, where it is a state-sanctioned fundamental
religion. They would have killed all the Satanists. They would have killed them all.
Well, they wouldn't have gotten to a point where they could put the statue up in the first place.
Good point.
And the one thing with the folks who are behind putting that statue up, while I do not necessarily agree with all of their choices and everything that they're doing, part of that is more it's a political statement. And I think it is intended as a cautionary tale for us not to go in that direction. You know, we worry that Sharia law is something that's going to be passed here in the United States. And I think that we should worry about any kind of fundamentalist religious law becoming the guidepost for all secular law. I'm leaning toward, if we're going to have, like, the opportunity for freedom of religion, the best course of action, considering that we have so many of them, with public places, if you don't want Baphomet downtown next to the Ten Commandments, is to simply make it so that we don't put any of them up there and we don't favor one side or the other, and we don't give anybody an opportunity to make such a grandstanding political statement as sticking Baphomet up where everybody can see them.
All right, let's take some calls here for you. They're lining up, and this hour is clicking by quickly. Heather's in St. Paul, Minnesota, on the wild card line. Hey, Heather, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say thank you for having me on. George,
sure.
You're awesome.
Absolutely.
Michelle, you're great. You're so insightful, and I love the way you've stuck up for the pagan community and all of this in the wake of what's happening in Florida. One of my questions for you is, I'm deeply tied to the pagan community in my city, so I really appreciate that, because Wiccans are for sure not evil. They're not the types that are going to go out and, like, sacrifice animals or people or anything like that. My question for you is, what do you think is the drive behind all this weird evil? I don't know. I feel like there's so much weird evil stuff going on with the shootings, the random shootings, people going to preschools, you know, churches and all of that. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that. Is that demonic? Is it just coming from, like, evil human nature? What is that? And I will take my question off the air. Thank you very much.
Okay, Heather, thank you. What do you think?
It makes me flashback to things that my grandmother would teach me as a little kid. And she had talked a lot about an experiment she'd read about where they overcrowded rats in a cage. And if you put too many, even if you give them everything that they want, eventually they just go crazy and start turning on one another. And I can't help but think that we're just a little overwhelmed, overwhelmed by so many different things going on in our world, not merely the technology, not merely the socioeconomic stresses. There's just too much from so many different directions, and I don't think that all of us are able to handle it in a healthy psychological way. We're being crushed by the overwhelming weight of all of the humanity and all of the suffering and all of the strife.
You put too many rats in a cage, they not only kill each other, they eat each other, they go crazy.
Yeah, they do horrible, horrible things, and I think that we are seeing some of that here with us.
Pasquale,
too many rats in a cage,
is in Santa Barbara, California. Pasquale, go ahead, sir.
George, listen, I got 2 points and I wanted to share something, but first I wanted to thank you so much. Your shows, it's like a tapestry. It's a genius of sharing. If I win the lottery, I want to have you the president of my university.
We'll try to do it part-time because I ain't leaving this show.
Okay. So you're doing, you've got so many wonderful guests on.
Great,
and Michelle, you have a very soothing voice. I wanted to say that. And I'm grateful for your scholarship, and somehow I feel that you're going to help us participate in a greater healing. So these are my 2 points. And then I wanted to share my personal belief about Satanism.
Sure.
and child abuse. So the first one is, George, I wanted you to tell Michelle about the smiley face gang and what we learned from some callers, that it was a military guy, a Satanist, and they were killing people. We don't know a lot about it. That was one question. The other one was, I lived in Marin County for about 10 years or longer, actually. And after some years, a lot of animals started disappearing, and I had an experience with some people, and I did believe that there was some kind of witchcraft and Satanism after living there for a while. It was a wonderful town, but I did believe about this evil activity. And someone said, call up the sheriff of Marin County, because he's been involved with this for like 20 years, and that was like in the late 80s or early 90s. I called him up, and he talked to me for about a half an hour or longer, and he said, it's absolutely true. These animal mutilations, they're groups. And then he shared something with me, and which shocked me, was that he said that some people will have a child out of a hospital, so there's no record of it, and they raise them to around 6 years old, and then they offer them to their supreme demon, Satan. And they feel that that gives them great power. And I think I met somebody like that in Marin County. So I wanted to share those two things. And then my insight is, I personally believe that a lot of child molestation and a lot of child abuse is that there's some children that have great spiritual light, but the evil people in the area that come in contact with them, they can't do their evil with the light coming from the child. So they do stuff to turn them around and stop them from sharing the light. They have a special light, and that's what part of why I think the kids are molested. But you yourself, you've had guests on who was talking about they were part of a military family, and they were abused, and there were satanic rituals. There was quite a few people. So I just wanted to share that, and thanks for letting me make my comment.
Okay, Michelle. Are you familiar with the smiley face cases? Now, these are
not actually.
These are college men. College men, a number of them, who've been found dead. They thought maybe they drowned, but they really don't think so anymore. But they were found dead near, you know, in rivers, banks of rivers, and there was graffiti of a smiley face left there when they found the body. And a couple New York detectives truly believe that this is the work of a group or serial killers. And then another theory has popped up that it's, screwed up military folks that are doing this. It's a bizarre story, but it's been happening for a number of years now.
That is actually really interesting and raises the question of like symbols and what symbols mean. Because a smiley face to one person is a completely innocuous thing. I mean, at this point, it's an emoji that we put on, you know, half of our emails and texts. But it seems as if it has a completely different meaning for at least one individual or a band of individuals. And there's an important lesson to take away from that, is the meaning of a symbol has much more to do with the person who is using that symbol than with our perception of what that symbol is supposed to mean. Which is how we can go very wrong in assessing the possibility of occult or ritual activity, because if we don't know what those symbols meant to the people using it, a smiley face could be a symbol used by something entirely nefarious.
Indeed. Hey, thanks for that, Pasquale. Appreciate it. Let's go to Hesperia, California. Henry is with us on the Wildcard Line. Hi, Henry.
Hey, George, big fan of your show. I have a question for your guest, Michelle.
Sure thing.
While I was listening to the show, I looked up a little bit about you, and it shows that you are a vampire. My question for you is, what does this vampirism mean to you? Is it like a Levian Satanism kind of intellectual curiosity thing? And being in that kind of circle, I'm sure you encounter some dark people. So what perspective, what is that about, and what perspective does it give you regarding this situation with purported ritualistic killings?
Well, the vampirism is, and I saw that Nori, George, you'd had a previous guest on energy vampires.
Yes, psychic vampires, we call them. Yeah,
yeah, and it's purely an ability to, and actually a need to, connect to the vital energy of other people, prana, chi, whatever you want to call it. And so it's less lifestyle, less belief system, although a skeptic would say that I believe that I am psychic, and I believe that there is a vampiric quality to that, that I have an innate ability to give and take and sense the vital energy of people.
I would not feel that from you. I don't feel that psychic vampirism from you. But now that you begin to say it...
Well, the ones who don't know what they're doing are the pains in the neck. And if you... It's not necessarily a bad thing. I spent the better part of 20 years learning how to make it work for me and learning how to control it so that it's not something that's harmful to anybody. And that's simply a matter of becoming aware. Now, on the other hand of it, yes, I delve without fear into all manner of different fringe groups and societies. I try to approach groups and practices, no matter how dark they may seem on the outside, with an open mind and seek out the people to find what their story is, how they perceive what it is they're practicing. So I have met with, and in some cases observed rituals, among Levian Satanists. I've seen wild blood rituals down in Harlem, New York, at underground clubs, and just about any other kind of thing that might make your hair curl. Two very, very, passive nature goddess loving rituals among my pagan and Wiccan friends, calling for like peace and healing of the planet. And I have definitely seen some stuff that is, one, not okay. Two, what anybody else would definitely define as evil. I don't know that I would go so far as to call it satanic, because I think that almost gives it too much power and too much legitimacy. But it gives me firsthand exposure to the people who practice it, and I do my absolute best as an academic, as a scholar, to bring an objective perspective, to neither sympathize nor judge.
Well, and you do a great job, but balancing that, Michelle. We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take some final phone calls with Michelle Belanger, author of The Dictionary of Demons, and much more. We'll be back. Well, I start my magical mystery tour again tomorrow night. I'll be in Edinburgh, Texas, for an event this weekend, and then to St. Louis, then off to Toronto for our live stage show event. They still have a few tickets left at georgenorilive.com, so make sure you do that. Then off to Denver for the Beyond Belief TV tapings, and then back to St. Louis. So for you Coast Insiders, tonight we played around with the studio cam and had a lot of fun with it. We're adding a new ingredient to the pre-show, and that is your text questions via Twitter, if you would. So you just tweet me a question or two that I can chat with you about on our one-way studio cam for you Coast Insiders. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Nori with you. Our final segment with Michelle Belanger as we talk about her work in the, well, you want to call it the supernatural, Michelle? How would you categorize yourself? Let's give you a title. What would you say you are?
I say occult expert, but sometimes that I use whatever word anybody else uses. Again, off the same idea that symbols mean to the person using them more than what they mean to the person who's observing them. So paranormal, supernatural, occult, all things strange and weird, everything that lies betwixt between.
By dabbling in the occult, is it dangerous for people? I mean, can you get harmed, you personally?
Dabbling in anything, you can get harmed. By dabbling, it's when you try something that you should be educated about and you should have enough knowledge in order to know how to do it safely. Dabbling implies that you've decided to skip all of that and just sort of poke at it. If you dabble with firearms, you're going to get hurt too. If you dabble with lighting fires, you are going to get hurt.
You got to know what you're doing.
Dangers.
What about the Ouija board? What do you think of that?
I think that too many people approach it with the wrong attitude, and that attitude is to try to be scared. They come to it with the notion that there is a possibility of opening a door that they cannot close, that there is going to be bad things that will come through. And by the nature of how energy and the spirit world works, when you put out that kind of expectation, when you put out that kind of energy, that's exactly what you're going to get. So if you approach using a Ouija board or any spirit communication tool with the fear or the expectation that something bad will happen, you have a greater chance of having something bad come through. It will be attracted to that. All of the things, they are tools from Ouija boards on down, tarot cards. If someone is educated and knows what they're doing with it, and if they can approach it without fear, and if they know how to protect themselves psychically and spiritually, it's no more dangerous than a handgun or a hammer. You can do horrible things with them if you don't know what you're doing.
That's true.
But they can also be useful tools.
We really didn't get into voodoo, or you mentioned Santeria earlier. Are those... This is what I was told, by the way, that the voodoo dolls with pins and stuff, that they never did that to harm people, that they would put people's names on the little dolls and use the pin to keep the name up there. And that
the
media got involved and figured, oh, my God, they're stabbing these little dolls with pins, and they've got Gina's name on it, so they're stabbing her. Not the case, is it?
An awful lot of the stuff that we see associated with voodoo, Santeria, and related, again, is stuff that has been presented in the media and doesn't have a whole lot to do with the actual legitimate practice. Now, dolls, little effigies or puppets that people will bind or stick needles or pins through, that's actually a type of effigy magic that goes all the way back to like the Greek and Roman classical era. You will find, they're called curse tablets, these little lead tablets rolled up with curses to either make somebody lose their legal case or make somebody's chariot team lose or make somebody fall in love with you, punish somebody. Little things that we would probably want to call voodoo dolls are sometimes found cast down wells along with these cursed tablets, and the figures are twisted. There are nails driven through them to symbolically bind the person to cause pain. So effigy magic is something that is really, really old, and perhaps the oldest magic. But is it, one, the province exclusively of voodoo or Santeria? No. And most of the voodoo dolls that you're going to find at the French Quarter, they're made in China. They're not made by actual practitioners. They're not really as big a deal or big a part of that religious tradition as we've been led to believe.
And that's a big difference, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's, if I want to get one thing across from this entire talk, our perceptions and what is presented in the media of any fringe belief or practice are often not what is actually believed or practiced by those people. And the best way to become educated about these things that do seem and can be scary, at least a little intimidating, the best way to know what's really going on is to find the people who practice it and talk to them as open-mindedly as possible without judgment. You won't get good answers if you come at them saying, hey, how about that horrible ritual killing stuff that you do, you know, when you meet with the devil in the woods? Like, you can't come at it from that perspective. You have to be a neutral party, an observer. You have to get your answers straight from the horse's mouth.
All right, let's go to the phones again. Let's go to Wisconsin. Michelle is with us. Hey, Michelle, good morning.
Good morning, George. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I just have a couple questions for Michelle. She kind of covered that in the last segment where you were discussing with her, where she said, if you go into something with fear, you're going to draw that energy.
That's going to come with you.
Results.
That's right.
But I think that she doesn't want to call certain things out within the occult practices with people who practice with bad intentions, because I think that she fears that these practitioners may target her with negative energy, and that may be one of the reasons why she just said, like, if you're going to find out about these things, you'd ask somebody who practices themselves with as open mind as possible. Well, having to have the open mind is because if you don't have the open mind, they're going to shoot negative energy at you. And I'm a person who understands the spiritual world and the energy world as well, but it doesn't stop me from calling evil evil. And anybody who uses ritual to direct negative energy towards someone else or to achieve favorable results for themselves at the expense of others, that's evil. And like they were saying with the Wiccans, it doesn't sound like they're practicing evil, but there is definitely a distinction between people who practice ritualistic types of magic with those who practice it for selfish and evil purposes.
Okay, well, let's ask Michelle to react to that. And also, are you afraid that you could be attacked by some of these people, Michelle?
No, I'm not afraid of being attacked. Most of what I did behind the scenes with Paranormal State was teach people how to protect themselves and not to brag about it. But right. I really do not fear what people would try to throw at me. And make no mistake, what I consider the most evil act is taking any action with full knowledge that it's going to cause harm to another person, and that evil is compounded when that act is taken expressly to benefit oneself. And I extend that beyond psychic, negative energy, magic, any of that. Any act that we knowingly engage in that hurts another person and we benefit from that hurt is wrong, and I think that we should stop doing it. But that type of evil is so systemic. It's such a part of our culture, profiting on other people's pain and misery, that it's, well, we've got a long way to go before we overcome something like that. Are there practitioners who do magic for all the wrong reasons, who engage in psychic wars,
I'm sure
witch wars and all of that stuff? Yes, there are. Are they the exception to the rule? Yeah, there are fewer of them than there are people who are genuinely just seekers and practitioners and misunderstood because of what they do. Should we, if we have the ability to lash out to protect, I don't condone finding people like that and attacking them proactively. What I do suggest is learning how to protect yourself and then teaching anyone who you think is vulnerable how to protect themselves as well.
Well, that's probably the best advice that you can give anybody. Let's go to Sharon in Manitoba out there in Canada now. Hi, Sharon. You are on the air with us.
Oh, thank you, George.
Sure.
I think, Michelle, you've answered my question earlier that I posed, but I guess what the comment that struck out at me was saying that you don't have fear of evil or in people with intentions of performing evil. And I think that in my experience or my impression is it's dangerous. It's a very powerful force that exists. So when you, because of your background, whether it's your educational background or just who you are, is your lack of fear due to your faith?
Yes, actually, absolutely. I've faced off with things. I know where I stand. I know what I believe. And I think that there is a difference between making accurate threat assessment, recognizing that something is dangerous, and being smart about that. And that is different from being afraid of it. Fear, to be afraid of something can sometimes handicap us in dealing with it. And I strongly recommend, like, if there is a way to overcome dread and fear, especially that kind of paralyzing, gut-churning fear that sometimes we will experience when faced with something that threatens us, that's something to try to, if not overcome entirely, find a way to control. And yes, my faith, my belief, my practices, I feel confident but I also do not feel that I am stupid. I do not go rushing into things that are dangerous. I assess them and recognize the danger and then take proactive steps to counteract that danger.
Does anything scare you, Michelle?
People. Like, not the magic, psychic, satanic part of people, but just
evil people.
That base nature that humans seem to have to want to prey on other people for their own selfish ends. That twisted bit of human nature, that scares me because it's so prevalent and it causes so much harm throughout our entire culture.
Case in point, the serial killers we were talking about earlier. I mean, what possesses people to be so sick to be able to do things like that?
We could probably spend another 2 hours talking about like the psychological effects that might lead up to a serial killer. But if you know anything about like sociopathic behavior, psychopathic behavior, some people just seem to be born wrong. Like they're missing things in their head that other people, that's just fundamental to our ability to empathize.
Brain deficiencies.
Some of them are unable to recognize other people as real quantities, as anything other than objects to either be removed as obstacles or destroyed for fun, for pleasure, for whatever, for profit.
As if they have no emotion.
I don't think all of the people who are psychopaths in that manner are necessarily serial killers. I think some of them are CEOs. I think some of them are people at the tops of companies and in positions of power who have no care for humanity, for any of the people that they might be preying upon, and simply are driven to feed their own needs and desires with no regards for the needs or desires or well-being of others.
East of the Rockies, Randall from Fort Wayne, Indiana, is with us now. Randall, you're on with Michelle. Go ahead.
Hey, great show tonight. I got to meet Michelle. Everything I've heard a lot of people speak about this, but she's like spot on, and she seems the most knowledgeable of all of them I hear. I got a quick comment, and then I got a question.
Sure.
The comment I had was about what you just talking about, the psychopathic and the sociopathic people. I think a lot of those people, they pick up those traits and they come part of them when their personalities are being formed between the ages of like 2 and 6. And I think also, they say a lot of these kids, obviously, they don't have a good family structure when they're growing up. I think that's when a lot of that stuff really takes a hold of them, that spirit. That negative, dark spirit, I think it takes hold of them somewhere between the ages of 2 and 6, and just over time, it just gets more progressive.
Maybe.
But a lot of them are, they're all those truly crazy people that do those horrendous things, they got a way of keeping it covered up and being real sneaky about it, but that's just almost, that's part of their nature. But the other thing I was going to ask was, I know Michelle's an expert in the occult and all that. One of the things I've heard here in the last year, and you've mentioned it, is how the Christian faith is falling away in the United States. Does Michelle, does she believe that might be because you have so many pockets of cults now in the Christian faith? They believe they're the only ones doing it right, and they believe if you leave there, they preach to these people. Well, if you leave our congregation or our fellowship, you're going to hell. If you've got a TV, you're going to hell, and all this stuff. Does she believe that is the reason why so many people are falling out or falling away from the Christian faith, and now they're just becoming atheists, is the fact that you seem like you have all these pockets of these cults now? I'll take my answer off here. Thank you.
All right, Michelle, you've got about a minute or so left. Go ahead.
My belief for a person of any faith, rather than succumbing to the cacophony of all the different beliefs and people telling you what to believe, you should study the scripture of your faith and find your answers for yourself, and don't be swayed by all of the other voices telling you what you should or shouldn't do from the media, from people, from family, from friends. read, educate, and find out what you believe for yourself.
The favorite part of what you do would be what?
Learning. Things that I never dreamed were real or possible. Digging through manuscripts that people have lost for hundreds of years and bringing that information back to light.
That's the way to do it. Michelle, give out your websites, if you would. I know you've got a website. You've got Facebook. You're on Twitter. Go ahead.
MichelleBelanger.com, and if you're not sure how to spell that, honestly, I think you can Google whack Michelle and vampire, and I'll come up for the first 25 pages. Seth Anakim, SethAnikeem. I'm active on Twitter under that ID. My Facebook fan page is under that. My YouTube channel, pretty much everything is under that. And that name will make more sense when the fiction book series, Conspiracy of Angels, launches, because the Anakim, the Nephilim, and the Gibberim all play a role in my world that I have created.
And ours, too. Michelle, thanks for being back on the show again. And it's been way too long, so make sure you're back much sooner than the last time. I will come back in a moment as we will talk with someone who was with me about 4 years ago about dark ecstasy.